but also whole grain. Plus, there are plenty of regular foods that easily fit into a gluten-free diet, like fruits and veggies, dairy, eggs, fish, meat, and poultry. You can get more information from the Children's Digestive Health and Nutrition Foundation, cdhnf.org, the Celiac Sprue Association, CSACELIACS.org, and the Celiac Disease Foundation, celiac.org. Prognosis. The good news is that a gluten-free diet will keep your child healthy and symptom-free for life. Gastroesophageal reflux disease, GERD. What is it? First, here is what GERD isn't. GER. GER, gastroesophageal reflux, is just a fancy term for spitting up, something the majority of babies do during the first year. Most babies have some form of GER, and as long as it isn't associated with poor weight gain, pain, or other symptoms of GERD, it's nothing to be concerned about. GERD, on the other hand, is not normal, and it isn't nearly as common, though it's seen more often in premature infants. It's similar to severe acid reflux in adults. Normally during swallowing, the esophagus propels food or liquid down to the stomach by a series of squeezes. Once food has entered the stomach, it is mixed with acid to start digestion. When this mixing occurs, the circular band of muscles at the lower end of the esophagus becomes tight, keeping the food from backing up. In premature and some term infants, the junction between the stomach and esophagus is underdeveloped and sometimes relaxes when it should be tightening. This relaxation of the muscles allows the liquid and food to come back up. When the acid in the stomach backs up into the esophagus or even up to the back of the throat, it causes symptoms of GERD, which may include some or all of the following. Frequent spitting up or vomiting, sometimes forceful vomiting, and irritation of the esophagus. Excessive drooling. A gurgling, congested, or wheezing sound during feedings. Sudden or inconsolable crying, usually due to severe pain or more than usual fussiness. Arching of the back during feeding, again, because of the pain. Erratic feeding patterns. Baby refuses food, for instance, or eats or drinks constantly. Slow weight gain. GERD usually begins between 2 and 4 weeks of age, and in some cases can last until age 1 or 2. Symptoms peak around 4 months and begin to subside around 7 months, when the baby begins to sit upright and take more solid foods. GERD is usually much less severe in breastfed babies because breast milk is more easily and more quickly digested than formula. Management. Treatment is aimed not at curing the condition, but at helping baby feel better until it's outgrown. Offer smaller amounts of breast milk, formula, or solid food more frequently instead of feeding large amounts less often. If your baby is on formula, ask the doctor if a switch in formula might help. Give your little one probiotics. There are drops available, or mix powder into a bottle of breast milk, or if you're formula feeding, choose one with probiotics and or mix probiotics in. Burp your baby frequently, unless too much burping seems to make it worse. If you can, prop your baby upright during feeding and for 1 to 2 hours after feedings. But avoid propping up the crib mattress so your baby can sleep at an incline. Doing so does not reduce GERD. Plus, it's not safe. This includes placing pillows under the mattress or using specifically designed sleep positioners or wedges, even those designed for babies with GERD. Using positioners or propping up the mattress is considered unsafe and a SIDS hazard. Avoid bouncing baby immediately after feedings. Try offering a pacifier after feedings, since sucking often eases reflux. Ask the doctor about medications that reduce stomach acid, that neutralize stomach acids, or that make digestion more efficient, such as Prevacid or Zantac. For cases that aren't helped with standard management, these meds are often helpful. Just keep in mind that because they may occasionally cause some side effects, and because they've been shown to increase the chances of allergies, they should be used only in diagnosed cases of GERD and only as a last line of treatment. Prognosis. The good news is that almost all babies with GERD will outgrow it. And once they do, it usually doesn't recur. Occasionally, reflux can continue into adulthood.
Projectile vomiting. Newborns spit up, and many spit up a lot. Usually, that's new baby digestion as usual, GER. Less often, it's GERD. And either way, most of the time, it's something a little one will outgrow. But if your baby throws up frequently and so forcefully that the vomit projects clear across the room, there's likely another cause. And that could be pyloric stenosis, a condition in which thickening or overgrowth of the muscle at the exit of the stomach causes a blockage, leading to increasingly severe and more forceful projectile vomiting, spewing a foot or more. Pyloric stenosis is more common in boys. It affects 1 in 200 boys and 1 in 1,000 girls, with symptoms usually appearing somewhere around 2 or 3 weeks of age. Call the doctor if your baby vomits forcefully. If a diagnosis of pyloric stenosis is made, the doctor may be able to feel a lump or notice muscle spasms that indicate this, or an ultrasound will help diagnose it. Surgery will probably be scheduled to correct the condition. Happily, the procedure is very safe and almost always completely effective, which means your little one's digestive system will be up and running normally, usually within a week's time. The special needs baby. After 9 months of hoping for a perfectly healthy baby, it can be heartbreaking to discover that your baby has been born with a birth defect or special needs. And if the condition wasn't detected prenatally, shock can compound feelings of pain and disappointment. But thanks to medical advances, tremendous strides have been made toward improving the prognosis for many special needs babies. In many cases, a birth disorder, even one that seems frightening at first, is relatively easily corrected with surgery, medication, physical therapy, or other treatment. In other cases, the condition and the outlook for the baby can be greatly improved. And while it may be hard to imagine at first, you'll find that raising your special needs baby adds another dimension to your lives, initially challenging, certainly, but ultimately enriching. Though caring for your special needs baby can be double the effort, it can also bring double the rewards. And as time passes, you'll likely discover that your child, in addition to teaching you something about challenges, teaches you a lot about love. For information, coping tips, and helpful resources about your baby's specific condition, see whattoexpect.com.
Hearing loss or impairment. What is it? There are many degrees of hearing impairment or hearing loss, and not all children with hearing loss are considered deaf. The child who is deaf has a profound hearing loss and cannot understand speech through hearing alone, even with the use of a hearing aid. There are two main types of congenital hearing loss in young children. Conductive hearing loss. With this type of hearing loss, there may be an abnormality in the structure of the ear canal, or there may be fluid in the middle ear, the space just beyond the eardrum. As a consequence, sound is not conducted efficiently through the ear canal and or middle ear, making sound extremely low or inaudible. Sensorineural hearing loss. With this type of hearing loss, there is damage to the inner ear or to the nerve pathways from the inner ear to the brain. Usually present at birth, this type of hearing impairment is most often an inherited condition. It can also be caused by maternal infection before birth or by certain medications taken by a mom-to-be. 2 to 4 out of 1,000 babies are born with some hearing loss each year. Some will have hearing loss in only one ear, some in both. Most newborns are given hearing tests in the hospital soon after birth. If your baby did not receive a hearing test as a newborn, or if you suspect hearing loss now, even a child who passed the hearing test as an infant can develop hearing loss. Speak to the pediatrician about getting a hearing test. Since hearing deficits are more common among graduates of the neonatal intensive care unit, NICU, babies who were preemies should be screened more carefully. Management. It is important to diagnose a hearing loss early and to determine the level of impairment, which can range from mild to profound. Treatment of hearing loss beginning as soon as diagnosis is made is very important to maximize your little one's future hearing and language development. Treatment depends on the cause and may include hearing aids. If a hearing loss is due to a malformation of the middle or inner ear, hearing aids which amplify sounds may be able to restore hearing to normal or almost normal levels. Hearing aids can also help with some types of sensorineural hearing loss. There are many types of devices, and the type used will depend on your little one's age and the type of hearing loss. Surgery. Cochlear implants, electronic devices that are surgically placed in the bone behind the ear, possibly in conjunction with amplifying hearing aids, can make a huge difference by restoring hearing and vastly improving the ability of totally deaf children to learn spoken language. The earlier a child receives the cochlear implants, preferably between age 1 and age 3, the better. Education. An education program should be begun as soon as hearing loss is diagnosed and may include teaching your little one to use devices that assist in learning to hear and/or to speak. Cued speech, in which a system of manual cues is used to supplement speech or lip reading, and a total communication program, which uses a combination of speech reading, signing, and finger spelling, and may also emphasize listening skills and speech production. Speech and language therapy, as well as counseling and training for parents, will also be part of the education process. The pediatrician and hearing specialist can work together with you to help you find the program that best meets your child's needs. The doctor can also point you to state-administered early intervention programs that provide services free of charge. Prognosis. With proper proactive treatment, children with hearing impairments are likely to have completely fulfilling lives. Some may eventually hear and speak, while others, such as those with more profound impairment, will learn to communicate through signing. Whether a child with a hearing impairment is mainstreamed, that is, attends regular classes with hearing children, depends on the individual child, the programs that local schools offer, and the availability of special classes in speech and language development in the mainstream schools in your area.
Hearing loss due to fluid in ears. Temporary hearing loss that's not congenital may sometimes occur due to persistent fluid in the ears. First-line treatment for this type of hearing loss is careful observation over time and occasionally a trial of antibiotics. If the fluid persists into the toddler years, the doctor may recommend inserting tubes. Happily, the tubes will clear up any temporary hearing loss and resulting language delays. For more on tubes, see What to Expect the Second Year. Chapter 20. Treating Injuries.
Boo-boos happen, even when you're conscientious, careful, and vigilant. Even when you've taken all the precautions and then some, you can't prevent every injury. But you can prepare for them, and that preparation can make all the difference. Hopefully, most of the boo-boos that happen in your baby's life will be small. The kiss and make better variety. Still, you'll need to know how to respond in the event of a bigger mishap, and how to care for injuries such as cuts, bruises, burns, and breaks that need more treatment than a cuddle. And that's what this chapter is for. It'll also give you guidelines on life-saving CPR and what to do if your child is choking.
Preparing for emergencies.
Because quick action after an injury is often critical, don't wait until your baby dunks a hand in your hot coffee or takes a swig of laundry detergent to look up what to do in an emergency. Before an accident happens is the best time to get as familiar as possible with the procedures for dealing with and treating common injuries. Review the protocol for handling less common injuries, snake bites for instance, when you're more likely to encounter them, say you're about to go on a camping trip. But don't stop there. It's one thing to read about injury treatment. It's another thing to apply your skills when an emergency strikes. So reinforce what you learn in this chapter by taking a course in baby safety, cardiopulmonary resuscitation, CPR, and basic first aid. Courses are available at many community centers and hospitals, and through fire departments, ambulance corps, the American Red Cross, and the American Heart Association. Check online or with your child's doctor for options. Some certified instructors will even bring the course to you. That way, anyone who might be caring for your baby, including grandparents, aunts, uncles, and babysitters, can attend with you in your home. Keep your skills current and ready to use with periodic refresher courses or a video course approved by the AAP or Red Cross. And be sure that anyone else who cares for your baby is also fully trained and prepared to deal with emergencies, from minor to major. To further prepare yourself for emergencies, discuss with your baby's doctor what the best course of action would be in case of a non-life-threatening injury, as well as in a serious emergency, when to call the doctor's office, when to go to the emergency room, and when to do both, when to call 911, and when to follow some other protocol. For minor injuries, the ER, with its long waits, abundance of germs, and priority given to life-threatening conditions, may not be the best place to go. Keep your first aid supplies in a child-proof, easily manageable, all-inclusive kit or box that can be moved where it's needed. Always keep a charged phone easily accessible so that it can be used at the site of an injury, wherever it happens. Always keep handy and accessible to anyone who cares for your child emergency phone numbers, the pediatrician, the poison control center, 800-222-1222, the hospital emergency room of your choice, your pharmacy, the emergency medical service, EMS, which can be accessed by dialing 911 in most areas, and your places of work, as well as the number of a close relative, friend, or neighbor who can be called on in an emergency. A regular care provider should have these numbers programmed into her own phone for instant access. Personal information updated regularly. Your child's age, approximate weight, immunization record, medications, allergies, and/or chronic illnesses, if any. In an emergency, these should be supplied to the EMS and/or taken to the hospital or ER. Location information. Home address, include cross streets and landmarks if necessary, apartment number, telephone number for use by babysitters or other caregivers calling for emergency help, a pad and pen for taking instructions from the doctor or 911 dispatcher or poison control. Be sure there's a clearly distinguishable number on your house and a light that makes the number visible after dark. Know the quickest route to the ER or other emergency medical facility your child's doctor recommends. If you live in a city, keep some cash reserved in a safe place and the car seat handy in case you need to use Uber or Lyft or call a taxi to get to the ER or doctor's office in an emergency. If you're very anxious or you're busy caring for your injured child, it's best if you don't drive. Let any babysitter who stays with your little one know where that emergency money is too. An easier option in cities where it's available, an app for a taxi or car service like Uber or Lyft that pinpoints your location instantly, picks you up usually within minutes, and charges your account for the ride. If you tend to overreact in stressful or emergency situations, try to learn how to respond calmly to your little one's illnesses and injuries. Practice with everyday bumps and bruises so that if a serious injury ever occurs, you'll be better equipped to keep your cool. Taking a few deep breaths will help you relax and focus no matter what you're facing. Try to remember that your expression, tone of voice, and general demeanor will affect how your baby responds to an injury. If you panic, your baby is more likely to panic and less likely to be able to cooperate. And an uncooperative baby is more difficult to treat. To help you both stay calm when there's been an injury, big or small, divert your baby's attention from the injury by engaging at least three senses. Stand where your baby can see you, speak calmly so he or she can hear you, and touch a part of the body that doesn't seem to be injured.
ED or ER? Have you been told to head to the ED, but you're not sure what an ED is? ED is short for emergency department, and it's preferred by medical professionals over the term ER or emergency room. Same place, where emergencies are handled in the hospital, different name.
First aid in the first year. Following are the most common injuries, what you should know about them, how to treat and not treat them, and when to seek medical care for them. Types of injuries are listed alphabetically. Abdominal injuries. Internal bleeding. A severe blow to your baby's abdomen could result in internal injury. The signs of such injury would include bruising or other discoloration of the abdomen, vomited or coughed up blood that is dark or bright red and has the consistency of coffee grounds. This could also be a sign that a caustic substance has been swallowed. Blood, it may be dark or bright red, in the stool or urine, and shock. Cold, clammy, pale skin, weak, rapid pulse, chills, confusion, and possibly nausea, vomiting, and/or shallow breathing. Seek emergency medical assistance. Call 911. If baby appears to be in shock, treat immediately. Do not give food or drink. Cuts or lacerations of the abdomen. Treat as for other large cuts or small cuts. With a major laceration, intestines may protrude. Do not try to put them back into the abdomen. Instead, cover them with a clean, moistened washcloth or diaper and get emergency medical assistance immediately. Call 911. Bites. Animal bites. Try to avoid moving the affected part. Call the doctor immediately. Then wash the wound gently with soap and water. Do not apply antiseptic or anything else. Control bleeding for small cuts or for large cuts, or for massive bleeding as needed with pressure, and apply a bandage. Bats, skunks, coyotes, foxes, and raccoons that bite may be rabid, especially if they attacked unprovoked. The same is true for dogs and cats. Although most household pets are vaccinated against rabies, you can't be sure unless you see proof of vaccination. You'll need to consult with the pediatrician to determine if your baby needs post-exposure rabies protection. Keep in mind that while rabies in humans is extremely rare, it is almost always fatal if not treated. If a dog or cat bite breaks the skin, call the doctor for advice, even if the animal is known not to have rabies. Antibiotics may be prescribed to prevent infection. Call the doctor immediately if redness, swelling, and tenderness develop at the site of the bite. These are signs of infection, which must be treated with antibiotics. Infection is more common with a cat bite than a dog bite. Human bites. If your baby is bitten by another child, don't worry unless the skin is broken. If it is, wash the bite area thoroughly with mild soap and cool water. Don't rub the wound or apply any spray or ointment, antibiotic or otherwise. Simply cover the bite with a sterile dressing and call the doctor. Use pressure to stem the bleeding for large cuts if necessary. Antibiotics will likely be prescribed to prevent infection. Insect stings or bites. Treat insect stings or bites as follows. Apply calamine lotion or another anti-itching medication to itchy bites, such as those caused by mosquitoes. Remove ticks promptly using blunt tweezers or your fingertips protected by a tissue, paper towel, or rubber glove. Grasp the bug as close to the child's skin as possible and pull upward steadily and evenly. Don't twist, jerk, squeeze, crush, or puncture the tick. If you're not sure whether it's a deer tick, you can save it and compare it with a picture of a deer tick or take a photo of it and email or show the doctor later. But there's no need to save it for any other reason. The doctor won't need it for testing. If your baby is stung by a honeybee, remove the stinger by scraping it horizontally using the edge of a blunt butter knife, your fingernail, or a credit card, or gently remove it with tweezers or your fingers. Try not to pinch the stinger, because doing so could inject more venom into the wound. Then treat as below. Wash the site of a minor bee, wasp, ant, spider, or tick bite with soap and water. Then apply cold compresses or ice wrapped in a towel if there appears to be swelling or pain. If there seems to be extreme pain after a spider bite, apply cold compresses and call poison control for emergency advice. If possible, describe the spider's appearance to help determine if it is poisonous. If you know the spider is poisonous, a black widow or brown recluse spider, a tarantula or a scorpion, for example, get emergency treatment, call 911, immediately, even before symptoms appear. Watch for signs of hypersensitivity, such as severe pain or swelling or any degree of shortness of breath after a bee, wasp, or hornet sting. About 90% of children react to an insect sting with brief, less than 24 hours, redness, swelling, and pain in a 2-inch area at the site of the sting. But the other 10% have a much more severe local reaction, with extensive swelling and tenderness covering an area 4 inches or more in diameter that doesn't peak until 3 to 7 days after the sting. Those who experience such symptoms with a first sting usually develop hypersensitivities or allergies to the venom, in which case a subsequent sting could be fatal without immediate emergency treatment. Life-threatening anaphylactic reactions, which are uncommon, usually begin within 5 to 10 minutes of the sting. They may include swelling of the face and or tongue, signs of swelling of the throat such as tickling, gagging, difficulty swallowing, or voice change, bronchospasm, chest tightening, coughing, wheezing, or difficulty breathing, a drop in blood pressure causing dizziness or fainting, and or cardiovascular collapse. Fatal outcomes in children are extremely rare, but do seek medical help immediately if you notice any systemic reaction affecting body parts and or systems other than the site of the sting. Should your child have a life-threatening systemic reaction, call 911 immediately. After any systemic reaction, a skin test and possibly other testing will be performed to determine sensitivity to insect venom. If it is determined that your child is at risk of a life-threatening episode from an insect sting, it'll probably be recommended that an epinephrine auto-injector, EpiPen or other brand, be taken along on all outings during bee season. Snake bites. Babies are rarely bitten by poisonous snakes, but such a bite is very dangerous. The 4 major types in the United States are rattlesnakes, copperheads, coral snakes, and cottonmouths, or water moccasins. All have fangs, which usually leave identifying marks when they bite. Because of a baby's size, even a tiny amount of venom can be fatal. After a poisonous snake bite, it is important to keep the baby and the affected part as still as possible. If the bite is on a limb, immobilize the limb with a splint and keep it below the level of the heart. Use a cool compress, if available, to relieve pain, but do not apply ice or give any medication without medical advice. Get prompt emergency medical help and be ready to identify the variety of snake if possible. If you won't be able to get medical help within an hour, apply a loose, constricting band, a belt, tie, or scrunchie loose enough for you to slip a finger under, 2 inches above the bite, to slow circulation. Do not tie such a tourniquet around a finger or toe, or around the neck, head, or trunk. Check the pulse beneath the tourniquet frequently to be sure circulation is not cut off, and loosen it if the limb begins to swell. Make a note of the time the tourniquet was tied. Sucking out the venom by mouth and spitting it out may be helpful if done immediately, but do not make an incision of any kind unless you are 4 to 5 hours from help and severe symptoms occur. If baby is not breathing and/or the heart has stopped, begin rescue techniques for breathing and cardiopulmonary emergencies. Treat for shock if necessary. Treat non-poisonous snake bites as puncture wounds and notify the doctor. Marine animal stings. The stings of marine animals are usually not serious, but occasionally a child can have a severe reaction. Medical treatment should be sought immediately after any marine sting. First aid treatment varies with the type of marine animal involved, but in general, any clinging fragments of the stinger should be carefully brushed away with a diaper, a credit card, or a piece of clothing to protect your own fingers. Heavy bleeding from large cuts or shock or cessation of breathing, as in breathing and cardiopulmonary emergencies, should be treated immediately and, if necessary, call 911. Don't worry about light bleeding, since it may help purge toxins. If possible, the sight of the sting of a stingray, lionfish, catfish, stonefish, or sea urchin should be soaked in warm water to break down the toxins for 30 minutes or until medical help arrives. The toxins from the sting of a jellyfish or Portuguese man of war can be counteracted by applying regular white vinegar or rubbing alcohol on the sting. Pack a couple of alcohol pads in your beach bag just in case. Unseasoned meat tenderizer, baking soda, ammonia, and lemon or lime juice can also help prevent pain. Bleeding. Check out our first aid steps for small cuts, large cuts, and puncture wounds. Broken bones or fractures. Possible broken arms, legs, or fingers. It's hard to tell when a bone is broken in a baby. Most broken bones in babies are usually just bent or buckled, not snapped, making a break harder to detect visually. Signs of a break can include inability to move or put weight on the part, severe pain, persistent crying could be a clue, or an extreme reaction of pain when the area is tapped, numbness or tingling, neither of which a baby would be able to communicate, swelling, discoloration, and/or deformity. Though this could also indicate a dislocation, such as an elbow dislocation. If a fracture is suspected, don't try to straighten it out. Try to immobilize the injured part by splinting it in the position it's in with a ruler, a magazine, a book, a roll of newspaper, or another firm object, padded with a soft cloth to protect the skin. Or use a small, firm pillow as a splint. Fasten the splint securely with bandages, strips of cloth, scarves, or neckties, but not so tightly that circulation is restricted. If no potential splint is handy, try to immobilize the injured limb against your arm. Check regularly to be sure the splint or its wrapping isn't cutting off circulation. Apply an ice pack to reduce swelling. Take your child to the doctor or ER even if you only suspect a break. Compound fractures. If a bone protrudes through the skin, don't touch it. Cover the injury, if possible, with gauze or with a clean diaper, control bleeding with pressure on large cuts, and get emergency medical assistance. Call 911. Possible neck or back injury. If a neck or back injury is suspected, don't move baby at all. Call 911 for emergency medical assistance. If you must move baby away from a life-threatening situation, such as a fire or road traffic, splint the back, neck, and head with a board, a chair cushion, or your arm. Move him or her without bending or twisting the head, neck, or back. Cover and keep baby comfortable while waiting for help, and if possible, put some heavy objects, such as books, around the child's head to help immobilize it. Don't give food or drink. Treat severe, large-cut bleeding, shock, or absence of breathing and/or breathing and cardiopulmonary emergencies immediately. Bruise. Check out our first aid steps for skin wounds, which includes bruises or black and blue marks. Burns. Important. If a child's clothing is on fire, use a coat, blanket, rug, bedspread, or even your own body to smother the flames. Limited burns from heat, first degree. Immerse burned fingers, hands, feet, toes, arms, or legs in cool, not cold, water, 50 degrees Fahrenheit to 60 degrees Fahrenheit. If baby is cooperative, hold the burned part under cool running water. Apply cool compresses to burns on the face or trunk. Continue until baby doesn't seem to be in pain anymore, usually 15 to 30 minutes. Don't apply ice, butter, or burn ointments, all of which could compound skin damage. And don't break any blisters that form. After soaking the burned area, gently pat it dry with a soft towel and cover it with a gauze pad, a cloth bandage, or another non-adhesive bandage. If redness and pain persist for more than a few hours, call the doctor. Call the doctor immediately for burns that look raw, that blister, second-degree burns, or are white or charred-looking, third-degree burns. Any burns on the face, hands, feet, or genitals, or burns that are the size of your child's hand or larger. Extensive burns from heat. Call 911 for emergency medical assistance. Keep baby lying flat. Remove any clothing from the burn area that does not adhere to the wound. Cut it away as necessary, but do not pull. Apply cool, wet compresses, you can use a washcloth, to the injured area, but not to more than 25% of the body at one time. Keep baby comfortably warm with burned extremities higher than the heart. Do not apply pressure, ointments, butter, or other fats, powder, or boric acid soaks to burned areas. If baby is conscious and doesn't have severe mouth burns, nurse or offer sips of fluid to prevent dehydration. Chemical burns. Caustic substances, such as lye, drain cleaner, and other acids, can cause serious burns. Using a clean, soft cloth, gently brush off dry chemical matter from the skin. Wear rubber gloves to protect your hands, and remove any contaminated clothing. Immediately flush the skin with large amounts of water. Call a physician, Poison Control, 800-222-1222, or the doctor for further advice. Get immediate medical assistance, call 911, if there is difficult or painful breathing, which could indicate lung injury from inhalation of caustic fumes. If a chemical has been swallowed, follow the first aid steps for poisoning. Electrical burns. Immediately disconnect the power source if possible, or separate baby from the source using a dry, non-metallic object, such as a wooden broom, wooden ladder, rope, cushion, chair, or even a large book, but not your bare hands. If baby isn't breathing and/or has no pulse, initiate rescue techniques for breathing and cardiopulmonary emergencies, and call 911. Even a minor electrical burn should be evaluated by a physician, so call your baby's doctor as soon as possible. Sunburn. If your baby gets a sunburn, treat it by applying cool compresses for 10 to 15 minutes, 3 or 4 times a day, until the redness subsides. The evaporating water helps to cool the skin. In between these treatments, apply a baby-safe sunburn relief spray or a mild moisturizing cream. Don't use Vaseline or baby oil on a burn because it seals in heat and seals out air, which is needed for healing. Acetaminophen may reduce pain of sunburn, but if there's swelling and baby is over 6 months, ibuprofen, which is anti-inflammatory, is a better choice. Antihistamines shouldn't be given unless they are prescribed by the doctor. When the sunburn is severe, there is blistering, pain, nausea, or chills, call the doctor immediately. Choking. Check out our steps for breathing emergencies for babies. Convulsions. Symptoms of a seizure or convulsion include collapse, eyes rolling upward, foaming at the mouth, stiffening of the body followed by uncontrolled jerking movements, and in the most serious cases, breathing difficulty. Brief convulsions are not uncommon for high fevers or febrile convulsions. For non-febrile seizures, clear the immediate area around baby or move baby to the middle of a bed or carpeted area to prevent injury. Loosen clothing around the neck and middle and lay baby on one side with head lower than hips. Elevate the hips with a pillow. Don't put anything in the mouth, including food or drink, breast or bottle. Call the doctor. If baby isn't breathing or has no pulse, begin rescue techniques for breathing and cardiopulmonary emergencies immediately. If someone else is with you, have them call 911. If you're alone, wait until breathing has started again to call, or call if breathing hasn't resumed within a few minutes. Also call 911 if the seizure lasts more than 2 to 3 minutes, seems very severe, or is followed by one or more repeat seizures. Seizures may be caused by the ingestion of prescription medicines or toxic substances, so check the immediate vicinity for any sign that your baby may have gotten into any. If it's clear that he or she has swallowed something hazardous, check out our first aid techniques for swallowed poisons. Cuts. Check out our first aid steps for large cuts and small cuts. Dislocation. Elbow dislocations, also known as nursemaid's elbow, are not as common among babies as they are among toddlers, who get them mostly because they are often tugged along by the arm by adults in a hurry, or flown through the air by their arms. Inability or unwillingness to move the arms, usually combined with persistent crying because of pain, is typical with a dislocation. A trip to the doctor's office or the ER, where an experienced professional can easily reposition the dislocated part, will provide virtually instant relief. If pain seems severe, apply an ice pack and splint before leaving. Dog bites. Check out our first aid steps for all animal bites. Drowning. Submersion injury. Even a child who quickly revives after being taken from the water unconscious should get a medical evaluation. For one who remains unconscious, have someone else call 911 for emergency medical assistance if possible, while you begin rescue techniques. If no one is available to phone for help, call later. Don't stop CPR until the child revives or help arrives, no matter how long that takes. If there is vomiting, turn baby to one side to avoid choking. If you suspect a back or neck injury, immobilize these parts. Keep the baby warm and dry. Ear injuries. Foreign object in the ear. Try to dislodge the object with these techniques. For a live insect, use a flashlight to try to lure it out. For a metal object, hold a strong magnet at the ear canal to draw the object out, but don't insert the magnet into the ear. For a plastic or wooden object that can easily be seen and is not deeply embedded in the ear, dab a drop of quick-drying glue on a straight-ended paperclip and touch it to the object. Don't touch the ear. Don't probe into the ear where you can't see. Wait for the glue to dry, then pull the clip out, ideally with the object attached. Don't attempt this if there's no one around to help hold baby still. If you're not comfortable attempting the above techniques, you don't have the necessary equipment to try them, or you try them and they fail, don't try to dig the object out with your fingers or with an instrument. Instead, take baby to the doctor's office or the ER. Injury to the ear. If a pointed object has been pushed into the ear, or if your baby shows signs of ear injury, bleeding from the ear canal, sudden difficulty hearing, a swollen earlobe, call the doctor. Electric shock. Break contact with the electrical source by turning off the power if possible, or separate baby from the current by using a dry, non-metallic object such as a wooden broom, wooden ladder, robe, cushion, chair, rubber boot, or even a large book. If baby is in contact with water, do not touch the water yourself. Once baby has been separated from the power source, call 911. If he or she isn't breathing and or has no pulse, begin rescue techniques immediately for breathing and cardiopulmonary emergencies. For electrical burns, check out our first aid steps for all burns. Eye injury. Important. Don't apply pressure to an injured eye. Touch the eye with your fingers or administer medications without a physician's advice. Keep baby from rubbing the eye by holding a small cup or glass over it, or if necessary, by restraining his or her hands. Foreign object in the eye. If you can't see the object, an eyelash or grain of sand, for example, wash your hands and use a moist cotton ball to gently attempt to remove it from baby's eye. If you can see the object, an eyelash or grain of sand, for example, wash your hands and use a moist cotton ball to gently attempt to remove it from baby's eye while someone else holds baby still. Attempt this only in the corner of the eye, beneath the lower lid, or on the white of the eye. Stay away from the pupil. Or try pulling the upper lid down over the lower one for a few seconds. If those techniques don't work, and if baby is very uncomfortable, try to wash out the object by pouring a stream of tepid, body temperature, water into the eye while someone holds baby still. Don't worry about your little one crying. Tears may help wash out the object. If after these attempts you can still see the object in the eye, or if baby still seems uncomfortable, the object may have become embedded or may have scratched the eye. Don't try to remove an embedded object yourself. Proceed to the doctor's office or ER. Cover the eye with a small cup, a gauze pad taped loosely in place, or with a few clean tissues or a clean cloth to alleviate some of the discomfort en route. Do not apply pressure. Corrosive substance in the eye. Flush baby's eye immediately and thoroughly with lukewarm water for 15 minutes, holding the eye open with your fingers. If one eye is involved, keep the chemical runoff out of the other eye by turning baby's head so that the unaffected eye is higher than the affected one. Don't use drops or ointments, and keep baby from rubbing the eye or eyes. Call Poison Control 800-222-1222 for further instructions. Depending on the substance, Poison Control may recommend a follow-up with an eye doctor to be safe. Injury to the eye with a pointed or sharp object. Keep baby in a semi-reclining position while you seek help. If the object is still in the eye, do not try to remove it. If it isn't, cover the eye lightly with a small cup, gauze pad, clean washcloth, or tissue, but do not apply pressure. In either case, get emergency medical assistance. Call 911 immediately. Though such injuries often look worse than they are, check with a doctor anytime the eye is scratched or punctured, even slightly. Injury to the eye with a blunt object. Keep baby lying face up. Cover the injured eye with an ice pack or cold compress for about 15 minutes. Repeat every hour as needed to reduce pain and swelling. Consult the doctor if there is bleeding in the eye, if the eye blackens, if baby seems to be having difficulty seeing or keeps rubbing the eye a lot, if the object hit the eye at high speed, or if there seems to be continued eye pain. Faintness, loss of consciousness. Check for breathing and pulse. If they are absent, begin CPR immediately for breathing and cardiopulmonary emergencies. If you detect breathing, keep baby lying flat, head slightly lower than the rest of the body, lightly covered for warmth if necessary. Loosen clothing around the neck. Turn baby's head to one side and clear the mouth of any food or objects. Call 911 immediately. Finger and toe injuries. Bruises. Babies, ever curious, are particularly prone to painful bruises from catching fingers in drawers and doors. For such a bruise, soak the finger in cold water. Add a couple of ice cubes to keep it cool. As much as an hour of soaking is recommended, with breaks every 10 minutes, long enough for the finger to rewarm, to avoid frostbite. Though few babies will sit still for this long, you may be able to treat your little one's injury for a few minutes by using distraction or holding him or her tightly. A stubbed toe will also benefit from soaking, but again, it often isn't easy to do with a baby. Bruised fingers and toes will swell less if they are kept elevated. If the injured finger or toe becomes very swollen very quickly, is misshapen, or can't be voluntarily straightened by the baby, call the doctor. It may be broken, in which case you'll want to check out our first aid steps for broken bones and fractures. Call the doctor immediately if the bruise is from a ringer-type injury or from catching a hand or foot in the spokes of a moving wheel. In these kinds of crush injuries, there may be more damage than is visible or apparent. Bleeding under the nail. When a finger or toe is badly bruised, a blood clot may form under the nail, causing painful pressure. If blood oozes out from under the nail, press on it to encourage the flow, which will help to relieve the pressure. Soak the injury in cold water if baby will cooperate. If the pain continues, the doctor may have to make a hole in the nail to relieve the pressure. A torn nail. For a small tear, secure with a piece of adhesive tape or a Band-Aid until the nail grows to a point where it can be trimmed. For a tear that is almost complete, carefully trim away along the tear line with scissors or baby nail clippers and keep covered with a Band-Aid until the nail is long enough to protect the finger or toe tip. Detached nail. If your baby injures a fingernail to the point that it detaches or almost detaches, don't try to pull it off. Just let it fall off by itself in time. Soaking the finger or toe is not recommended, since moisture can increase the risk of fungal infections. Do make sure, however, to keep the area clean. An antibiotic ointment can be applied, but isn't always necessary. Ask the pediatrician. Keep the nail bed covered with a fresh Band-Aid until the nail starts growing back in. After that, you can leave it uncovered. It usually takes 4 to 6 months for a nail to grow all the way back. If at any point you notice redness, heat, and swelling, it could mean the area is infected, and you should call the doctor. Foreign objects. Check out our first aid steps for foreign objects in the ear, foreign object in the eye, foreign object in the mouth or throat, or foreign object in the nose. Fractures. Check out our first aid steps for broken bones and fractures. Frostbite and frostnip. Babies are extremely susceptible to frostbite, particularly on fingers and toes, ears, nose, and cheeks. In frostbite, the affected part becomes very cold and turns white or yellowish-gray. In severe frostbite, the skin is cold, waxy, pale, and hard. If you notice any signs of frostbite in your baby, immediately try to warm the frosty parts against your body. Open your coat and shirt and tuck baby inside next to your skin. You can also breathe warm air on baby's skin. As soon as possible, get to a doctor or an ER. If that isn't feasible immediately, get baby indoors and begin a gradual rewarming process. Don't massage the damaged parts or put them right next to a radiator, stove, open fire, or heat lamp. The damaged skin may burn. Don't try to quick thaw in hot water either, since this can further damage the skin. Instead, soak affected fingers and toes directly in tepid water, about 102 degrees Fahrenheit, just a little warmer than normal body temperature, and just slightly warm to the touch. For parts that can't be soaked, such as nose, ears, and cheeks, very gently apply warm compresses, wet washcloths or towels soaked in water, slightly warm to the touch. Continue the soaks until color returns to the skin, usually in 30 to 60 minutes. Add warm water to the soaks as needed to maintain tepid temperature. Nurse baby or give warm, not hot, fluids by bottle or cup. As frostbitten skin rewarms, it becomes red and slightly swollen, and it may blister. Gently pat the skin dry. If baby's injury hasn't yet been seen by a doctor, it is important to get medical attention now. Once the injured parts have been warmed and you have to go out again to take baby to the doctor or anywhere else, be especially careful to keep the affected areas warm, wrapped in a blanket, en route, since refreezing of thawed tissues can cause additional damage. Much more common than frostbite, and fortunately much less serious, is frostnip. In frostnip, the affected body part is cold and pale, but rewarming, as for frostbite, takes less time and causes less pain and swelling. As with frostbite, avoid dry heat and avoid refreezing. Though an office or ER visit isn't necessary, a call to the doctor makes sense. After prolonged exposure to cold, a baby's body temperature may drop below normal levels. This is a medical emergency known as hypothermia. Don't waste any time getting a baby who seems unusually cold to the touch to the nearest ER. Keep baby warm next to your body en route. Head injuries. Important. Head injuries are usually more serious if a child falls onto a hard surface from a height equal to or greater than his or her own height, or is hit with a heavy object. Blows to the side of the head may do more damage than those to the front or back of the head. Cuts and bruises to the scalp. Because of the profusion of blood vessels in the scalp, heavy bleeding is common with cuts to the head, and bruises there tend to swell to egg size very quickly. Treat as you would any large cut or small cut or bruise. Check with the doctor for all but very minor scalp wounds. Possible serious head trauma. Most babies experience several minor bumps on the head during the first year. Usually these require no more than a few make-it-better cuddles and kisses. However, after a bad blow to the head, it's wise to keep a close eye on your baby for the first 6 hours. Symptoms may occur immediately or not show up for several days, so continue to watch a child who has had a serious head injury, even if he or she initially seems fine. Call the doctor or 911 immediately if your baby shows any of these signs after a head injury. Loss of consciousness. Though a brief period of drowsiness, no more than 2 to 3 hours, is common and nothing to worry about. Difficulty being woken. Check every hour or two during daytime naps and 2 or 3 times during the night for the first day after the injury to be sure baby is responsive. If you can't wake a sleeping baby, immediately check for breathing. Vomiting. Black and blue areas appearing around the eyes or behind the ears. A depression or indentation in the skull. A large swelling at the site of the injury, through which you would be unable to detect a depression or indentation. Oozing of blood or watery fluid, not mucus, from the ears or nose. Inability to move an arm or leg. Unusual lack of balance that persists beyond 1 hour after the injury, a sign of dizziness. Unequal pupil size, or pupils that don't respond to the light of a pen light by shrinking or to the removal of the light by growing larger. Unusual paleness that persists for more than a few minutes immediately after the injury. Convulsions. Your baby just isn't acting like him or herself. Seems dazed, confused, doesn't recognize you, is unusually clumsy or unable to coordinate movements as usual, or any other behavior that is unusual, unexpected, or worrisome. While waiting for help, keep your baby lying quietly with his or her head turned to one side. Do not move your baby if you suspect a neck injury, unless not doing so would be dangerous. Treat for shock, if necessary. Begin rescue techniques for breathing and cardiopulmonary emergencies if baby stops breathing or doesn't have a pulse. Don't offer any food or drink until you talk to the doctor. Heat injuries. Heat exhaustion or mild hyperthermia, high body temperature, is the most common form of heat injury. Signs may include profuse sweating, thirst, headache, muscle cramps, dizziness or lightheadedness, and/or nausea. A baby may be cranky, refuse food, or vomit. Body temperature may rise to 101 Fahrenheit to 105 Fahrenheit. Treat heat exhaustion by bringing your baby into a cool environment, air-conditioned if possible, and giving cold fluids to drink. Cool compresses applied to the body and a fan may also help. If baby doesn't quickly return to normal, vomits after drinking, or has a high fever, call the doctor. Heat stroke, or severe hyperthermia, is less common and more serious. It typically comes on suddenly after overheating, as when a baby has been enclosed in a car in warm weather. Signs to watch for include hot and dry or occasionally moist skin, very high fever, sometimes over 106 degrees Fahrenheit, diarrhea, agitation or lethargy, confusion, convulsions, and loss of consciousness. If you suspect heat stroke, wrap baby in a large towel that has been soaked in cold tap water and summon immediate emergency medical help. Call 911 or rush baby to the nearest ER. If the towel becomes warm, repeat with a freshly chilled one. Hypothermia. After prolonged exposure to cold, when heat loss exceeds heat production, a child's body temperature may drop below normal levels. A child with hypothermia may seem unusually cold, shiver, be lethargic, or move stiffly. In severe hypothermia, shivering stops and there is a loss of muscle control and a decline in consciousness. Hypothermia is a medical emergency. Don't waste any time in getting a child who appears to have hypothermia to the nearest ER. Call 911 if you don't have quick transportation. Remove any wet clothing, wrap your baby in blankets, and turn on the car heater en route to the hospital. If you are waiting for emergency medical help at home, tuck your baby under an electric blanket, if you have one, in a very warm bath, not hot enough to burn, of course, or against your body, skin to skin, and covered with blankets. Insect stings or bites. Check out our first aid steps for all bites. Lip, split, or cut. Listen to our first aid steps for mouth injuries, including split lip and cuts inside the lip or mouth. Mouth injuries. Split lip. Few babies escape the first year without at least one cut on the lip. Fortunately, these cuts usually look a lot worse than they are and heal a lot more quickly than you'd think. To ease pain and control bleeding, apply an ice pack or let an older baby suck on a feeder bag filled with ice. If the cut gapes open, or if bleeding doesn't stop in 10 or 15 minutes, call the doctor. Also call if you suspect a lip injury may have been caused by chewing on a plugged-in electrical cord. Cuts inside the lip or mouth. Such injuries are also common in young children. To relieve pain and control bleeding inside the lip or cheek, give an older baby a feeder bag filled with ice to suck on. To stop bleeding of the tongue, if it doesn't stop spontaneously, apply pressure to the cut with a piece of gauze, a washcloth, or a cloth diaper. Call the doctor if the injury is in the back of the throat or on the soft palate, the rear of the upper mouth. If there is a puncture wound from a sharp object, such as a pencil or stick, or if bleeding doesn't stop within 10 to 15 minutes. Knocked out tooth. If one of your baby's teeth has been knocked out, there's no need to try to preserve it, since there's little chance that the dentist will attempt to reimplant it. Such implantations rarely hold, but the dentist or doctor will want to see the tooth to be sure it's whole, as fragments left in the gum could be expelled and then inhaled or choked on, or the area could become infected. So take the tooth along to the dentist or to the doctor, before you tuck it into a memento box, that is. Broken tooth. Clean dirt or debris carefully from the mouth with warm water and gauze or a clean cloth. Be sure the broken parts of the tooth are not still in baby's mouth, since they could cause choking. Place cold compresses on the face in the area of the injured tooth to minimize swelling. Call the dentist or doctor as soon as you can for further instructions. Foreign object in the mouth or throat. Removing a foreign object from the mouth that can't be grasped easily is tricky. Unless done carefully, the effort can push the object in even farther. To remove a soft object, such as a piece of tissue paper or bread, pinch baby's cheeks to open the mouth and use tweezers to take the object out. For anything else, try a finger swipe. Curl your finger, index or pinky, and swipe quickly at the object with a sideways motion. Do not attempt a finger swipe, however, if you can't see the object. If a foreign object is lodged in the throat, check out first aid steps for choking and breathing emergencies for babies. Nose injuries. Nosebleeds. Keeping baby in an upright position or leaning slightly forward, not back, pinch both nostrils gently between your thumb and index finger for 10 minutes. Baby will automatically switch to mouth breathing. Try to calm baby because crying will increase the blood flow. If bleeding persists, pinch for 10 minutes more and/or apply cold compresses or ice or an ice pack wrapped in a dampened washcloth to the nose to constrict the blood vessels. If this doesn't work and bleeding continues, call the doctor, keeping baby upright, to reduce swallowing of blood and the risk of choking on it while you do. Frequent nosebleeds, even if easily stopped, should be reported to baby's doctor. Sometimes adding humidity to the air in your house with a humidifier will reduce the frequency of nosebleeds. Foreign object in the nose. Difficulty breathing through the nose and/or a foul-smelling, possibly bloody nasal discharge may be a sign that something has been pushed up the nose. Keep baby calm and encourage mouth breathing. Remove the object with your fingers if you can reach it easily, but don't probe or use tweezers or anything else that could injure the nose if baby moves unexpectedly or that could push the object farther into the nasal canal. If this fails, take baby to the doctor or ER. A blow to the nose. If there is bleeding, keep baby upright and leaning forward to reduce the swallowing of blood and the risk of choking on it. Use an ice pack or cold compresses to reduce swelling. If swelling persists, or if there is a noticeable deformity, see the doctor. Poisoning. Swallowed poisons. Any non-food substance is a potential poison. The more common symptoms of poisoning include lethargy, agitation, or other behavior that deviates from the norm, racing, irregular pulse, and/or rapid breathing, difficulty breathing, diarrhea or vomiting, excessive watering of the eyes, sweating or drooling, hot dry skin and mouth, dilated, wide open, or constricted, pinpoint pupils, flickering, sideways eye movements, and tremors or convulsions. If your baby has some of these symptoms and there's no other obvious explanation for them, or if you have evidence that your baby definitely has swallowed a questionable substance, you saw it happen, or possibly has, you found your child with an open bottle of pills or hazardous liquid, found spilled liquid on clothing or loose pills on the floor, smelled chemicals on his or her breath, immediately call or have someone else call Poison Control, 800-222-1222, or the ER for instructions. Call promptly for suspected poisoning, even if there are no symptoms. They may not appear for hours. When calling, be ready to provide the name of the product ingested, along with the ingredients and package information, if available. If part of a plant was ingested, supply the name or at least a description of the plant. The time the poisoning was believed to have occurred, how much of it you know or believe baby ingested, give an estimate if you don't know for sure, any symptoms that have appeared, and any treatment already tried. Have a pad and pen handy to write down exact instructions. If your child has excessive drooling, breathing difficulty, convulsions, or excessive drowsiness after the ingestion or suspected ingestion of a dangerous substance, call 911 for emergency medical assistance. Begin emergency treatment immediately if your baby is unconscious or baby is having breathing and cardiopulmonary emergencies. Do not try to treat poisoning on your own without expert advice, and don't rely on the directions on the product label. Get explicit medical advice before giving anything by mouth, including food or drink or anything to induce vomiting. The wrong treatment can do harm. Noxious fumes or gases. Fumes from gasoline, auto exhaust, and some poisonous chemicals, and dense smoke from fires can all be harmful. Symptoms of carbon monoxide poisoning include headache, dizziness, coughing, nausea, drowsiness, irregular breathing, and unconsciousness. Promptly take a baby who has been exposed to hazardous fumes into fresh air. Open windows or go outside with baby. If baby is not breathing and/or doesn't have a pulse, begin rescue techniques for breathing and cardiopulmonary emergencies immediately. If possible, have someone else call 911. If no one else is around, call 911 yourself after 2 minutes of resuscitation efforts, and then return immediately to CPR and continue until a pulse and breathing are established or until help arrives. Unless an emergency vehicle is on its way, transport baby to a medical facility promptly. Have someone else drive if you must continue CPR, or if you were also exposed to the fumes and your judgment and reflexes may be impaired. Even if you are able to successfully reestablish breathing, immediate medical attention will be necessary. Poison ivy, poison oak, poison sumac. Most children who come in contact with poison ivy, poison oak, or poison sumac will have an allergic reaction, usually a red, itchy rash with possible swelling, blistering, and oozing that develops within 12 to 48 hours and can last from 10 days to 4 weeks. If you know your baby has had contact with one of these plants, protect your hands from the sap, which contains urushiol, the resin that triggers the reaction, with gloves, paper towels, or a clean diaper, and remove his or her clothes. To prevent resin from fixing to skin, immediately wash it with soap and cool water for at least 10 minutes and rinse thoroughly. In a pinch, use a wipe. The rash itself is not contagious and won't spread from person to person or from one part of the body to another once the sap has been washed away. Also wash anything else that may have come in contact with the plants, including clothes, pets, stroller, and so on, since urushiol can remain active on them for up to a year. Shoes can be thoroughly wiped down if they aren't washable. If a reaction occurs, calamine lotion, or better yet, an anti-itch lotion that contains pramoxine, such as Caladryl, will help relieve the itching, but avoid lotions that contain antihistamines, such as Benadryl. Topical hydrocortisone cream can be applied to decrease inflammation. Cool compresses and/or a colloidal oatmeal bath may also offer relief. Make sure your baby's nails are cut short to minimize scratching. Contact the doctor if the rash is severe or is causing a great deal of discomfort because of its location, around the eyes, on the genitals. Puncture wounds.